So the UDA leader, Jackie McDonald, says it would be hypocritical to object to Martin McGuinness's bid for the Irish presidency because he's held the post of Deputy First Minister here for several years. Here's what he said on the radio this morning.
Well, I'll be a bit hypocritical. If we accept him, us in Northern Ireland accept him as what is practically joint Prime Minister of Northern Ireland, to object him to being, or even to be a candidate as President of the South.
And given the strong relationship McDonald has with the current president, he would only give his view on how Martin McGuinness would fare in the role.
Well, I think he's put himself up or to be shot down. I'm very worried of the baggage or his background. He's a very plausible fella. I've met him a few times, and we've talked about working class issues, and I don't have a problem with him in his present position. Regarding him being an heiress or being a president, I don't know if he could do the things that either Mary has done in the last 21 years.
The columnist Alex Kane, former director of communications for the Ulster Unionist Party, with us this morning. Morning to you, Alex.
Good morning, Steve.
And Jude Collins with us as well. Morning to you, Jude.
Good morning, Stephen.
What do you think, Jude? Well, is McDonald on the money here?
Well, it seems a reasonable statement to make. If we were talking about the Fintan O'Toole's view of it, I read his article carefully in the Irish Times yesterday, and he seems to be saying that Martin McGuinness is good enough for the Protestants in the north, but not okay for the Catholics in the south. That essentially is what the message is, and that's what Jackie McDonald is echoing.
Alex Kane?
I think there's a difference. I mean, I think Jackie McDonald, I can see his point. It does, you know, superficially sound like there is some sort of hypocrisy that there's one such standard on one side of the border in Northern Ireland and another standard on the other. But the difference is there's a huge difference between the roles. In terms of McGuinness occupying the role of Deputy First Minister in Northern Ireland, there's no choice in that matter. That's a mandatory situation under the rules of the agreement. Sinn Féin, irrespective, and it would apply to Unionist loyalists as well, irrespective of anyone's political or terrorist or criminal past, it doesn't matter. If they get elected in their constituency, they get in. If they're the biggest party, they can be the First Minister or Deputy First Minister. And their job in that role is simply to promote their own party political agenda. That's the rules. It's different because in the South, the President is above politics. The job of the President is to be non-partisan. It's not to promote any political agenda. And I think that's a key difference. So I think there isn't hypocrisy in the real sense. I think it's because it's two entirely different jobs.
Yeah, but if McGuinness can bring the DUP with him, in a sense of he can persuade them to work with him, he can form this relationship with Peter Robinson insofar as he's able to travel with him, he's able to work with him, then is he not showing a lot of the political skills that if he can do it up here, he can do it anywhere?
No, again, Stephen, I think there's a difference there because, I mean, yes, you can argue that, you know, that Martin McGuinness personally or some of the leadership of Sinn Féin persuaded the DUP, and it makes it sound like there's some great conversion on one side or the other. It wasn't the case. The simple rules of the Northern Ireland Assembly are that unless both the largest parties buy in. So if Robinson had said no, say he said no, Paisley said no, I'm sorry, there are no conditions under which I'm working with Martin McGuinness as the Deputy First Minister, or Gerry Kill, name the figure, there are no conditions. The government turned around and said, well, that's fine, Peter, that's fine, Ian. You're not going to have a government. So it isn't a case of moral or political persuasion. It was a case of a fait accompli. If either of them wanted to be in government in Northern Ireland, they had to buckle down and more or less do what the other side said. And that's why you have the mutual veto. That's why you have stalemate. That's why you have yesterday debates about education, debates about peace walls. No decisions can be made because they're constantly checkering each other. It's not going to be the Irish. I'm sorry. I mean, however you want to cut this cookie, I can't imagine that the electorate of the South actually want a president who will say, well, my role is to be partisan and to push an agenda, and not only an agenda in the South, but also to apply that agenda to what's happening in the other six counties, which I regard as part of Ireland as well. And apart from that, you know, I don't think they really want the situation in which the president, who is supposed to be non-partisan, is clearly, wherever you take him on the world stage, is clearly so recognised with a political and terrorist movement. I think it will have repercussions for them. I suspect he won't win. I think he made the contest far more interesting than it was a week ago. But I think there are huge questions which will now have to be asked. And oddly enough, you know, it's back to McDonald's point about the hypocrisy thing. There are questions in Northern Ireland which Martin McGuinness has never had to answer simply because of the mandatory coalition. In other words, there wouldn't have been a government if Sinn Féin didn't go in. It's not the same. So I think there are now opportunities for the electorate and for the media to ask him very serious personal questions about why he got involved, what benefits he think the terrorist campaign actually brought, and whether he thinks his background actually qualifies him.
Let's get the first call of the day on air. Michael in Belfast. Morning, Michael.
Good morning, Stephen. After reading the article yesterday, I have to say I was absolutely disgusted by the anti-Republican rant that it was.
This is Fintan O'Toole's article.
Absolutely, Fintan's article. It's just, I mean, he's on record. He's blatantly anti-Republican. You have to ask yourself why at this point. And I would echo what Jackie McDonald's saying in terms of we elected Martin McGuinness as Deputy First Minister, as an MLA and as an MP for Westminster. It was good enough. We heard nothing from Fintan at that point. The rant only came out yesterday.
I'll tell you what, stay there, because Fintan O'Toole's just joined us, actually. I'll let you speak to him directly. Morning to you, Fintan.
Morning, how are you?
Thank you for talking to us. Michael will put his point to you. I don't think he's going to hold back. Go ahead, Michael. You can speak to Fintan.
Good morning, Fintan. I mean, I really do have to question your timing on this. Why was it good enough for the elected of the North to vote Martin McGuinness in as Deputy First Minister, to vote him in as an MLA and to vote him in as an MP, but yet it's not good enough for the South? That sort of hypocrisy just absolutely sickens us up here.
Okay.
Let
Fintan respond to that.
Yeah, look, it's an absolutely legitimate question. I completely accept that it's a very reasonable question to ask. And let me explain why it's different. First of all, let me say that I have been completely supportive of Sinn Féin being integrated into the political process, both North and South.
With respect, that's up to the electorate. That's not up to you.
Let me answer the question. Right?
Sure.
I've been completely supportive of this. Last week alone, for example, I spoke at a Sinn Féin organised meeting about the Irish economy and the euro. So I am not at all suggesting that Sinn Féin is a pariah south of the border and should be integrated into the political process north of the border. What's different about this? And you know, you've asked the question, why now? Why now? Because of the presidency. There are two really substantial differences. One is that Martin McGuinness's role in the north is part of a deal. It's implicit in the Belfast Agreement, which has been accepted and supported democratically by people both sides of the border. There is no deal about the Irish presidency. This is not an office which is included in some sort of party political or international deal. It's an office under the Irish Constitution, and there is a free, competitive, open vote for it. The second huge difference is that this is a personal office. It is not a party political office. This is an office about who the person is and the values they represent. Now, what the role of journalism in all of this is to be completely independent and to apply exactly the same standards to everybody who was standing for that office. David Norris has been excluded from standing for that office, not even from being president, but from standing for the office, because journalists quite rightly exposed the fact that he had written two letters seeking clemency for a former lover of his in Israel. That has excluded him from running for the office. If Bertie Ahern, for example, who wanted to run for the presidency for Fianna Fáil, had stood, people like me would be right out saying, you know, what about the dig-outs? What about the way you behave in your office? We would be going in.
Can I come back on that?
Record of the party.
Go ahead, Michael.
Now, there is
okay.
No
yeah, just to make the point, first of all, we're trying to exclude the office of presidency.
Questions about what Martin McGuinness did and did not do. And
okay. Can I come back?
I'm not answering those questions.
Can I come back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. To try and exclude the office of president in the overall context of a political settlement is absolute nonsense. And absolutely smacks of the exclusion that existed within the 26 counties, whether it was censorship or everything else. We earned the right as Republican voters to vote for the president. It's an absolute disgrace that people in the North can't vote. The other point that you're making is that it's not a political appointment. Of course it's a political appointment. Fine Gael backed their person, Fianna Fáil backed theirs, Labour backed theirs. And of course we know that it has to be a position which is free from party political membership or whatever.
Well,
but
of course, Fianna Fáil aren't backing anybody.
We take that point, and Martin McGuinness, in my opinion, is more than capable of fulfilling all of those obligations.
Okay.
More importantly, he will bring to an experience which will move the country forward in a very positive way, not just in terms of national reunification, but also in terms of the social economic mess that the 26 counties and indeed the 6 counties is in. And the other point I would make, your article absolutely takes into no consideration that the so-called Irish Republic was founded on the back of the War of
Independence. Michael, thank you. Here's Hugh in Limavady. Morning, Hugh.
Good morning. Good morning, Stephen.
Bob just called us, actually. I'm very interested, Bob, in your point this morning. You didn't leave us your number. Maybe you can call us back. 08459-555-678. Is Jackie McDonald right
this morning
when he has said, the UDA leader has said that it would be hypocritical to object to Martin McGuinness's bid for the Irish presidency because he's Deputy First Minister up here? What are the unionists talking about, he's saying? Go on, Hugh.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, look at the hypocrisy of Fintan O'Toole and Joe Duffy and all the political parties in the South when they have the Deputy Prime Minister down there, the tarnished Eamon Gilmore, was part of the political wing of the official IRA. They planted bombs. They were part of the so-called armed struggle. They planted a bomb in a canteen over in England, in an army canteen, and killed an army chaplain and some cleaners and civilian workers. They never killed the people they were trying to kill, but they were part. They were just
the organisation did, not Eamon Gilmore.
So where is that
hypocrisy?
You know, I mean, they're constantly attacking Martin McGuinness. I mean, the Labour Party's MEP, Princess DeRosa, was part of the official IRA, part of the official Sinn Féin. They didn't decommission their weapons until after the provisionals. So where are they coming from?
Fintan?
Well, look, let's try and bring some kind of dispassionate, objective look at this, right?
Yes,
there is no evidence whatsoever that Eamon Gilmore had any involvement at all in this.
He was part of the official Sinn Féin, the political wing of the official IRA.
Look, I'm actually not going to take part in this discussion unless I can actually answer the question, right? There is no evidence whatsoever, and I think legally you should be very careful about this because there's absolutely no evidence. If there is evidence, I suggest you really should bring it forward. And I will absolutely publicise that evidence in the Irish Times. If you've got evidence that Eamon Gilmore was directly involved in planting bombs, in killing people, in human rights abuses, that's a huge story, and I will absolutely guarantee you that it will be given.
And you're right, there is absolutely no evidence. We're talking about the organisation, aren't we?
Let's be calm about this, right? The point I was making in my piece is actually a very simple point, which is there are rules that apply to the conduct of conflict. Those rules apply regardless of what the conflict is, right? Those rules are called the Geneva Convention. And they've subsequently been reinforced by international law with the International Criminal Court, etc., right? So we know objectively what is acceptable in conflict and what's not acceptable in conflict. And I think Sinn Féin has never, ever confronted the reality that a great deal of what the IRA did was by objective standards. These aren't my standards. I'm not inventing these. Right? You can go and read the Geneva Convention. And what they say is basically, in the course of a conflict, you cannot murder civilians. You cannot kidnap people. You cannot subject people to inhuman and degrading treatment. You cannot have summary executions on the back of kangaroo trials. There's a whole range of things that you can't do. Now, it is a matter of objective historical fact that the IRA engaged in all of those practices over a very long period of time. It's a matter of objective historical fact that the IRA killed 644 civilians, that is, non-combatants, in the course of the campaign. Now, we can take two views of that, right? We can either say, look, this is the past, it's completely irrelevant, we're not going to talk about it at all. Now, if you want to take that view, by all means do. That's absolutely fine. By the way, you have to be consistent about it. Sinn Féin, for example, is, in my view, quite rightly demanding an inquiry into the Ballymurphy massacre in 1971 by the British Army. Now, you can't do that. You know, if we're going to have a sort of blanket view that we can't talk about the past, then we shouldn't have had the Savile inquiry. We can't investigate Ballymurphy. Now, hold on. If somebody's going to stand for the presidency of the Republic, as I said, it is an office which is about the personal values of the individual. It is not a party political office, right? And it is absolutely legitimate for people in that context. I mean, it would be grotesque for us to say that the media should investigate whether or not David Norris sent letters of clemency to a court in Israel years and years ago, and that rules him out from standing in office, but that the deaths of 644 civilians,
okay,
that torture, that murder, that kidnapping, that summary executions, that the biggest set of human rights abuses which have ever occurred in the 20th century history of Ireland are completely off.
Okay, Jude Collins.
Yeah, let's be honest.
Vincent has projected the image of Martin McGuinness as president being arrested for war crimes. In that case, I would suggest that Tony Blair, George Bush, Nelson Mandela, Obama, all of those could be equally open to charges of war crimes. He says, he quotes them quite correctly from the Geneva Convention, that non-active members of opposing forces, you know, shouldn't be subjected to degrading or lethal treatment or subjected to violence. Tony Blair in Iraq, George Bush in Iraq, Winston Churchill, bombing of Germany.
You're talking about heads of state.
Nelson, yes, Nelson Mandela, ANC, Obama with Guantanamo.
You don't distinguish between Tony Blair, a democratically elected prime minister of a country. You don't distinguish between what how the British have fought a war and Martin McGuinness?
Yeah, I am
and a paramilitary organization.
I'm simply saying that if you apply the Geneva Convention, which is what Fintan headlined his article with, then, in fact, you have to be consistent and arrest all of those people as well. The fact of the matter is this. Fintan is saying that if you have a past, you can't have a future. Well, a lot of other people disagree with that, and the history of Ireland contradicts it. For example, Eamon de Valera and Sean T. O'Kelly, between them, were president of Ireland for 28 years. Now, both those men served time in British prisons, and it wasn't for dropping litter in the street. General Sean McCohan was the first Minister for Justice of the Free State in 1948. He was a former IRA man. He was sentenced to death by the British government. You simply must be consistent with these things.
Well, here's
if you had to say that anyone who had a past in the IRA cannot possibly be the president of Ireland, then you must say De Valera shouldn't have been the president of Ireland, Sean McEntee shouldn't have been the president of Ireland, lots of people who held positions of responsibility, Sean Lamass,
okay.
Who entered the
here's
door
the
with
DUP's Gregory Campbell joining us now. Gregory, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sam.
So you've heard Jackie McDonald this morning, UDA leader, and he's saying, hold on a minute, unionists, including people like yourself, there's no way you can object to Martin McGuinness. Totally hypocritical. You're accepting him now. You're working with him now in Northern Ireland.
Well, I don't know. Jackie obviously had a bit of a close relationship with the present Irish president, so I don't know whether he's working on future favours or not. I just don't know. But let's look at the distinction. And I think Alex Keane suggested a bit about it earlier on in the programme. Let's look at the factual position. Anyone who qualifies and wants to stand for presidency of the Irish Republic can do so. Martin McGuinness is one of those who has done so. The system in the Republic is that every eligible voter in the Irish Republic then votes for the person that they want to be the president. Now, in Northern Ireland, how we get the Deputy First Minister, or the First Minister for that matter, is that every eligible person votes for individual candidates, most of whom happen to belong to political parties, and then the largest party chooses
that.
Who the person is for the First Minister, and the next largest party chooses
we understand
the
that.
First.
But you had a choice.
That means there's a big distinction in why Martin McGuinness is Deputy First Minister in Northern Ireland and how he becomes President.
The point
of the
is you had a choice. People like you, a unionist like you, and your unionist party, the DUP, you had a choice. For many, many years, you said never. You said you would not work with them. And then you changed your mind.
No, that is not right. The never attitude was very specific. We at the past and now and even in the future, we will never work with people who are committed to violence, who are engaged in murder, who are armed to the teeth, and won't support the police. That's the never. That is the never, and that remains constant.
So
what happened was that those who were committed to all those things and were carrying them out were then brought to the position that they had to decide, are we going to engage in this and keep going on with this in the aftermath of 9/11 and the prospect of no movement of any kind in any direction, or are we going to bite the bullet, not to use a pun, and then say, we're going to have to give all this up to get into the political process, and they then did that.
Here's the difference.
And we then said, well, then let's move on.
But here's the point, and there's the point, Gregory Campbell, and then you said, move on. So you got to a point where you felt you could move on and you didn't need to ask Martin McGuinness any further questions so that you could work with him as Deputy First Minister. And so it follows that you don't need to ask him any more questions in order to say, do you know what? He's quite entitled to run for Irish President. Why all this furore now? Why all the questions about his past now? You've asked all the questions.
There's no furore now. I mean, the issues that are relevant now in the Republic have been relevant in Northern Ireland for years. They don't preclude him running. I'm not saying whether he should or shouldn't run. That's a matter for the people in the Irish Republic. And, you know, when the votes were counted in the Republic, and as in Northern Ireland in the past, we will then know whether the Roman Catholics, and we know what the situation is by the Roman Catholics in Northern Ireland and in Mid-Ulster. They were quite content, it would appear, to vote for somebody with his past. They did that. And in order to get some form of government in place in Northern Ireland, we had to move on that basis.
Stop asking about his past, in other words.
On the 28th of October, or when the final vote is finally counted, the people in the Republic, which is a predominantly Roman Catholic country, will then have decided whether they work on that basis as well. And we will know whether they have as little time for the people in Northern Ireland who suffered as a result of the IRA terror as the people in Mid-Ulster did. We know all that.
But
let them get on with that.
But they're not complaining about that. But the DUP,
let them get on.
The DUP's now accepted Martin McGuinness as a Democrat.
We have accepted that the political process that is in place here has got a place for someone like him. Now, the point is that when it opens up for a place like him, because he has moved beyond the terror that the Republican movement engaged in for so long, when we've done that, I think he has an obligation then to be open and transparent about what he did in the past. I mean, he's been very clear about what he didn't do.
He's got an obligation. It's a must, is it? It's a must. So it's a must for the South, but it's not a must for the North.
No. So he's an obligation in Northern Ireland as well. He just has denied his obligation and walks away from it.
And you're not insisting on it. The DUP's not insisting on it. Why should the people of the South?
We don't have a system of government in place in Northern Ireland unless we have the party that the majority of nationalists vote for. We don't get a system in place unless we accept
Jude
that.
Collins?
But that doesn't preclude him from being open and honest about his past.
I think
he seems
Jude
to be denying everything he didn't do in the past.
Go on, Jude.
But he won't own up to what he did do.
This is a question essentially about how we deal with the past, and it keeps on coming up and coming up. What we're talking about is Martin McGuinness at the present in the South standing for President of Ireland. Now, the Irish government set up the Bureau of Military History in 1947 to allow former combatants in the 1916 Rising and in the Black and Tan War to tell their story. But those records were not released until 2003. That's a full 80 years after the Rising, after the War of Independence. Now, we know that people like General McKeown, we know that people like De Valero, we know that people like Michael Collins did the most atrocious things, because war is an atrocious business. And the fact of the matter is, actually, Eamon De Valero and Sean Lamass both refused to contribute their record of their past to the Bureau of Military History.
Okay.
That was kept until all of the people who had been involved in it had died. And then it was looked at. We're asking, let's say, a small number, but very vociferous number of people in the South, among the media, are asking again and again and again, we want it now. We won't wait in the 80 years.
Okay.
We want it before the presidential election.
All right. There are loads and loads of people wanting on air this morning, as you can understand. 0845 955 678. Here's Steve in Ballymoney. Morning to you, Steve.
How you doing, Stephen?
Go ahead.